गिरिवरधारी गोपी जनव यशोद नंदन विज चंद्रंजन यशोद नंदन विज चंद्रंजन यमुना तीर चारी यमुना तीर वन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंजा बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंजा बिहारी माधव जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर तारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर तारी गोपी यशोद नंदन विज चंद्रंजन यशोद नंदन विज चंद्रंजन यमुना तीर वन चारी यमुना तीर वन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर तारी गोपी जन गिरिवर जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर तारी गिरिवर यशोद नंदन भज जन रंजन यशोद नंदन भज जन रंजन न तीर वन चारी यमुना तीर वन चारी हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय प्रभुपदा जय प्रभुपदा जय प्रभुपदा जय प्रभुपदा
Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajakacharya Astaturasat Shri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Anantakuti Vaishnava Rinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Vrimsakahu Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhara, Sri Vasari, Gaura Bhakta Vrindaki Jai, Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath, Shamkun Radhakund, Giri Govardhana Ki Jai, Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Mathura Dham Ki Jai, Mayapur Navadvip Dham Ki Jai, Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai, Ganga Mayi Ki Jai, Yamuna Mayi Ki Jai, Tulsi Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada's Transcendental Book Distribution Ki Jai, Harinama Sankirtana Ki Jai, Prasadam Distribution Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Before I begin, thank you all very much for coming. I beg you all to pray for me that I may say something useful and beneficial for all of us. I know that the prayers of the Vaishnavas are very influential to Krishna, and I can use every bit of help that I can get. So please give me your help, give me your assistance. Thank you so much. Tat yacha manyam asura hiranyakashipu cha hata dvaya adya mudita sadu api Vishchika Hatya Loka Cha Nirvatim Itaha Pratyanti Sarve Rupam Narsinga Vibhaya Jana Smaranti Tadyacya manyam asurascha hatastrayadya Mudita sadur api vishchika sarpahatya Lokascha nirvritimita pratiyanti sarvai Rupam Nrsinga Vibhayaya Jana Smaranti तद्यच्च मन्यमसुरश्च हतस्त्वयद्याम् मोदित सादर अपि वृश्चिक सर्पहत्याम् लोकश्च निर्वृत्तिमिता प्रतियन्ति सर्वे रूपं नृसिंह विभयाय जना स्मरन्ति तद्यच्च मन्यमसुरश्च हतस्त्वयद्या मोदित सादर अपि वृश्चिक सर्पहत्याम् लोकश्च निर्वृत्तिमिता प्रतियन्ति सर्वे रूपं नृसिंह विभयाय जना स्मरन्ति Please chant. Ladies, please. Tat, therefore, yacha, kindly give up, manyam, your anger, asura, my father, Hiranyakashipu, the great demon, cha, also, hataha, killed, vaya, by you. Adya, today. Mudita, take pleasure. Sadhu, excuse me, that sadhu api, even a saintly person. Vrishchika, sarpa, hatya, by killing a snake or a scorpion. Loka, all the planets. Cha, indeed. Nivritim, pleasure. Itta, have achieved. Pratiyanti, are waiting for pacification of your anger. Sarve, all of them. Rupam, this form. Narasingha, O Lord Narasingadev. As some of you are saying Narasingadev, it's not Narasingha, it's Narasingadev. Okay? There's no slant over the first S, and there's no dot over the first S. So it's Narasingadev. Vibhaya, for mitigating their fear. Jannaha, all the people of the universe. Smaranti, will remember. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. My Lord Narasingadev, please, therefore, cease your anger now that my father, the great demon Hiranyakashipu, has been killed. Since even saintly persons take pleasure in the killing of a scorpion or a snake, all the worlds have achieved great satisfaction because of the death of this demon. Now they are confident of their happiness, and they will always remember your auspicious incarnation in order to be free from fear. Please repeat. My Lord Narasingadev, please, therefore, cease your anger now that my father, the great demon Hiranyakashipu, has been killed. Since even saintly persons take pleasure in the killing of a scorpion or a snake, all the worlds have achieved great satisfaction because of the death of this demon. Now they are confident of their happiness and will always remember your auspicious incarnation in order to be free from fear. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Jai Prabhupada. The most important point in this verse is that although saintly persons never desire the killing of any living entity, they take pleasure in the killing of envious living entities like snakes and scorpions. Hiranyakashipu was killed because he was worse than a snake or a scorpion, and therefore everyone was happy. Now there was no need for the Lord to be angry. The devotees can always remember the form of Narasingadev when they are in danger. And therefore the appearance of Narasingadev was not at all inauspicious. The Lord's appearance is always worshipable and auspicious for all sane persons and devotees. Omagyana timarandasya gananjana shalakaya Chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. So, let me take the first point, because Srila Prabhupada gives emphasis to this. The most important point in this verse is that although saintly persons never desire the killing of any living entity, they take pleasure in the killing of envious They take pleasure in the killing of envious living entities like snakes and scorpions. So this, although Srila Prabhupada has not used an adjective after the word snakes, but the words that come before that, that devotees never take pleasure in killing any living entities, means living entities that are generally harmless, that do not create unnecessary danger or problems or pressures, stresses. What is being spoken about here is poisonous snakes. Poisonous snakes are dangerous. They're harmful. And not only dangerous and harmful, but they will strike even without provocation. For example, if you walk near a cobra, he will assume that you're coming to threaten him and harm him, even if you show no indication of that. He doesn't think like a human being. He just thinks like a snake. And as it's mentioned here, a snake is full of envy. And when you're full of envy, you're always afraid that someone is about to take over your position, hurt your little big-shot identity. I'm the big snake. I've got so much venom. I can kill anybody. So you have that mentality. Therefore, anybody comes near, you rear up and throw the fangs right into the wherever you can get, because you want to kill that person. That's what the poisonous snakes do. But there are numerous harmless snakes which do a lot of good for the environment. You know, like there's the rat snake that eats up the rats and makes sure that they don't get into your home. There's milk snakes, garter snakes, kill out insects in your garden or destroy those insects that harm your plants and your vegetables. Corn snakes. So many harmless snakes, and if they see you, they're not provoked, they just run. Or I shouldn't say that, snakes don't run, they slither. So they slither away, and they don't want to go near you, they're frightened of you. So those snakes, we don't have to hurt them. Of course, sometimes if you hear the sound of a rattlesnake, better to get away as quickly as you can, because they may attack you faster than you can kill it. But if you have the weapons and you have the means to deal with it, then you have to deal with it according to what is necessary and the circumstances. A lot is time, place, and circumstances, situation. You're in your home, and your little child, which is 5 years old, is playing around, and a rattlesnake slithers in and goes near the feet of your child, and you walk in. Well, what do? The first thing you do is you try to grab something and slam the snake, because you know that if your child puts his feet near that that rattlesnake's mouth, it's going to get poisoned. And sometimes the poison can actually be deadly, very harmful. Similarly for scorpions. Now, there are some scorpions that are, but they all have stingers, but it depends on what the stinger releases. Some stingers release just a very little poison and very neutral, very mildly poisonous, so mildly that it hardly just gives a little sting. And some scorpions are so deadly that in a few minutes you could be dead. So it's good to avoid them and try to make certain that your house is free of them. And if you know there are any, call persons who are skilled to deal with that. Better not to deal with it yourself unless necessity requires it. But I think more important than these points which I just made, which are important, but is how do we become snakes? Generally, no one ever thinks of himself or herself as a snake. By snake, I mean having all of the horrible qualities, the chief of which is envy and anger. In fact, in ISKCON, going back into the years, if you were unliked, or if you were very mischievous, or if you were very furtive, if you were very duplicitous, you were considered a snake. That's the term we used. He's a snake, or she's a snake. So that was a very common term. If anyone wanted to use an epithet against a devotee that they didn't like, well, instead of using the ones that the karmis use, we use the word snake. So, of course, the, nobody objected because it's an acceptable word. But in terms of what is meant here, it meant that a person who has some very terrible, very objectionable qualities. So, the question is, snake or a person who has these lower qualities, qualities of lust and anger and greed and envy and pride, all of these qualities are the qualities of a snake, and a snake does not like anyone to have, doesn't like anyone to have any pleasure except himself or herself. Stay out of my territory. We see a very good example of this in the Bhagavatam, Krishna book. When Krishna learned that many cows were dying because of the fumes of a particular snake who was living in the in what we call the Yamuna River. But this, it's a, kind of like a sectioned off part, which is called a lake. So this deadly snake, Kaliya, was living there with his wives, and he didn't want anybody around him. He didn't want anybody going into that lake. So a number of birds would fly over, and the fumes would immediately get into their into their nostrils, into their lungs, and they, boom, they just die. So this Kaliya was, he was really something else, something bad, terrible. So Krishna heard about it, and he was determined to get rid of this Kaliya. But he was also determined to accomplish a few other things, a few good things along with the bad things. Anyway, so what Krishna did is he went there, he got up on this tree, on the trunk, tightened his belt, kind of like a wrestler, and then jumped off the tree and splashed into the water and started swimming and making a big splash. And Kaliya, he heard this splash, splash and splashing. Who's in my lake, you know? And he started swimming, looking, and then he saw Krishna. Well, he was torn betwixt and between, because on the one hand, when he looked at Krishna, Krishna was so beautiful, so entrancing, so gorgeous, that he just stood there stunned, forgetful of his demoniac quality. But then he saw Krishna was splashing and splashing and provoking him, so he came back into his true snake-like or serpent-like consciousness, and he began chasing after Krishna. And then Krishna began going around in circles, and Krishna allowed him to capture him and get him in his coils. And Kaliya was determined to smother him, squash him. Meanwhile, the residents of Vrindavan were on the shore, and all the cowherd boys, they were all shouting, "Krishna, Krishna, please get free," you know. They were praying, and then the elders, they came. Mother Yashoda came. When she saw this, she was completely, completely out of her mind, her senses. She began walking into the river, or the water, the lake, as she was going to confront Kaliya herself. She didn't care. It's very interesting. Mothers and their child, for example, a woman who's afraid of a rat or a mouse may see it and scream. But if the rat goes and attacks her child, she becomes so full of courage, it's unbelievable. My mother had that situation. I was in a crib, and the rat jumped up on the crib and was back to get my go for my neck. And she just went tearing after the rat, boom, jumped right over. And later on, when I heard that story, I said, whenever you see a mouse, you always scream. But how did you, where did this courage came from? I don't know where it came from. All I know is how to get that rat out and kill him if I had to. So this is what we call maternal instinct. Any of you who are mothers know that at certain times you have a great deal of courage and strength, and at other times you may be, you know, in a kind of a female fearful kind of mentality. So this is what Krishna does. This is how the species are protected. And if you ever see a mother bear, don't get near it when she's has her cubs near her. That's very dangerous. Better really start running. So because it's a protective type of thing. So getting back to the point, finally Krishna, he saw that the residents of Vrindavan, they were upset. They were crying. They were shouting. Their hearts were being cracked apart
Because their Krishna, their one and only, their lovable, their adorable Krishna was being smothered and killed, and they didn't want this. Even Nanda Maharaj, he tried to go into the water, and Balaram stopped him and said, "Don't worry, Krishna's got it under control. Don't worry." He said, "Under control? The kid's practically being smothered. What under control?" So, anyway, Krishna saw that the residents of Vrindavan were practically dying. And the idea of being separated from their Krishna was unthinkable, inconceivable. So Krishna saw that they were passing out. Cowherd boys were passing out. Mother Yashoda was, she passed out, and she was just in a meditation on Krishna. So what he did is he finally tore himself away from these coils, this 100 coils, tore himself away without any problem. But what he was doing, why was he allowing this Kaliya to squash him and squeeze him that way? Actually, he felt no pain, but why was he doing that? To increase the devotional love of all the residents of Vrindavan. They were feeling so much sympathy, they were feeling so much fear, and their intense emotions were fixed upon Krishna. "No, no, Krishna, don't go, save yourself, Vishnu, save." Their whole mood, their whole mentality was so completely fixed and centered on Krishna, with so much love, so much devotion, so much care, and they wanted Krishna to be saved. This love that he evoked intentionally, carefully, like a master actor. And then finally, when it was time to get free, whoosh, just got out of it. And what did he do? He started fighting with Kaliya, and Kaliya thought he could easily whip him. You know, he got the poison coming out of his mouth, out of his eyes, and so forth. So Krishna just jumped up on his hoods and started bouncing and pounding with his feet on the hoods of Kaliya. And what happens is this Kaliya was completely, it's like if I took a sledgehammer, boom, bashed it on your head. One hood went down, another hood would go down, then another hood go down, one after another. And the residents of Vrindavan, they were coming back to life. They would say, "Ah, Krishna, Krishna's winning." It was kind of like at a football game when your team is winning. "Yay, Krishna, yay, wow, he's on top, he's winning." So, and then finally, Kali just collapsed. He couldn't take it any longer. He wasn't able to fight anymore. So the wives of Kaliya, they came and they appealed to Krishna, and they appealed to him and they begged him, "Please don't kill our husband. He's all we have. Could you please save him? At least let him go." And actually, that's exactly what Krishna did do, due to the devotion, due to the love, the sweetness, loyalty that they had, the faithfulness they had to their husband. They said, "We know he's a demon, we know he's all these things, but please let him go and maybe he'll change." And actually, that's what happened. When he came back to his consciousness, he began to pray to Krishna, and he admits very clearly that I'm just a snake, I'm a serpent. I have the mentality of a very envious, angry person. It's in my nature, and I'm so sorry, but I just couldn't control it. So Krishna understood that. He said, "Okay, I understand that, but I want you to get out of here as fast as you can. I don't want you here killing my cows and killing the birds and frightening all my cowherd boyfriends. Just get out, go to the ocean and Nagalaya, go live on that place where you came from, which is where the snakes, there's an island where they hang out, so to speak." So, anyway, the point of the whole thing is that, there was one other point that the Nagapatnis, the wives of Kaliya, made. They said, "How is it possible that this snake, this serpent, full of poison, full of envy, full of hatred, full of anger, how is it possible that he got," they're talking to Krishna, "how is it possible that they got your lotus feet, he got your lotus feet on his head? This is unusual. This is amazing. It's astounding. It's unbelievable. To get the feet of Krishna on your head, to get the dust, how would he, what did he merit that? What did he do?" They couldn't believe it. And on one hand, yeah, Krishna was stomping him, but on the other hand, he was blessing him. He was giving him the glory of his own being. He was, in effect, ready to send him back to Godhead. This is a very amazing thing. So the Nagapatnis were absolutely amazed, and they thanked him. And also, so did Kaliyas thank him for stomping on his head, because actually, in the ultimate analysis, he was cured of his situation. Not that necessarily his envy went away completely, but nonetheless, he knew what could happen if that envy is misused and to harm human beings. So this is a problem that we all have. We all have many, including myself, we all have many low qualities, lust and anger and greed, in higher or greater or lesser degrees. They're all inside us. They're like animals living down below, so to speak, in the basement of the subconscious mind. And quite often, we like to deny that we have these things because we manifest many nice qualities. Warmth and kindness, consideration, patience, understanding, sympathy. So we tend to not think that those bad qualities don't exist in me. Until somebody, for example, says something insulting or offensive. For example, somebody looks at you and says something about you're dirty or you're sorry. What a horrible color you've got. Where did you find it? You find that in the dumpster or something? You know, it's like that. Somebody says that to you. Why? What's wrong with it? Well, look at it. It's horrible. Why would you? I wouldn't even give that to a person downtown on 7th Street in Broadway. So the person gets insulted, gets offended, feels slurred. He says, well, look what you got on. I wouldn't even give that to whatever. So anyway, if, what is the cause of this? The cause of it is pride, false pride. There's one thing called real pride and one thing called false pride. Real pride is something good. False pride is something bad. And it's just what I described this very few moments ago. When you have false pride and you think you're wonderful, you think you're great, you're glorious, you're invincible, invulnerable, you think you're glorious, you're beautiful, you're all these things, and then somebody comes and upsets this impression that you have of yourself, this is part of the Lord, I want to lord it over mentality. That's what pride is all about. That's what it comes from. I want to be superior. I want to be the greatest, the highest, the best, the biggest. And so when you say that to me, you're in effect lowering me, stopping me from being this great, glorious, wonderful, supreme person that I think I am. So when I begin to, by what you have said, you've tried to take me down. I'm not going to let you take me down. So I'm going to take you down so that you are lower than me. You see? And if you're lower than me, then I'm still on top. Ha ha. See? So anyway, that's the mentality. Now, this is false pride. Thinking, whenever we do something good, whenever we're glorified, we're honored, we're celebrated, even for our birthday, we think, yeah, we're wonderful, we're respectable, we're worthy of praise, we're worthy of honor. As soon as we begin to think that, now Krishna may think that, but as soon as we begin to think that, what happens is that we build this illusion of superiority, of supremacy. And as long as we want to feel superior, why do we want to feel superior? Because we were all originally Krishna conscious living entities in the eternal world. And we chose to come down here in order to enjoy separately from Krishna, independently of Krishna. And if we want to enjoy independently, it means we want to taste, we want to feel, we want to experience what it's like to be a Lord, as opposed to be a servant of the Lord. When you no longer want to serve the Lord, well then, you're no longer fit or qualified to live in the spiritual world. But when we are in this particular material world, and we want very much to be supreme, glorious, and wonderful, then this is the feeling of lordship. And God forbid anybody should upset, destroy, shake my sense of lordship. This is false pride. And to have this kind of pride is what causes all problems. It causes conflicts between human beings. It causes anger. It causes hatred. It causes fights. And it causes war.
pride, false pride, thinking we're something. After all, what are we? You have a little achievement, it will be forgotten in 10 or 50 or 100 or 1,000 years. It'll all be gone. And eventually, when everything is withdrawn into Lord Vishnu, who's going to know about it? Nobody's going to know about it. Nobody's going to care about it. And you'll even forget about it because you will have had 1,000 births since then. You don't even remember all the things that you're having so much pride about. It's all gone. You have something new to be proud about. So what is the value of it? So now what is real pride? And how you can counteract false pride is by real pride. Real pride is the conscious knowledge of the fact that we are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. So we are all living entities. We're part and parcel of the Lord. We're connected with the Lord. We're related to the Lord. Isn't it wonderful to know that you, everyone here, everyone in this world, is related to the greatest of the greatest of the greatest? Krishna, who is unaffected by the three modes of material nature, who is full of all of the opulences of beauty and wealth and strength, beauty, wealth and strength and knowledge and renunciation. He's full of all of these. Nothing can affect him. He gives complete protection to his devotees. There is nobody higher. Nobody greater, nobody better, nobody bigger, nobody stronger, nobody more who will give us more security than Krishna. So, therefore, isn't it wonderful? Doesn't it fill us with gladness, with happiness, with joyfulness that we are related to the greatest and the best of persons? It's like a little kid, he has a very rich father, and he feels so secure, he feels so happy that he doesn't have to worry about anything. He gets his clothes, he gets his meals, he goes to school, he does, no worries. So, similarly, a devotee who feels connected with Krishna, that's why Krishna says, one who is not connected to the Supreme Lord in Krishna consciousness can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? So, Krishna is saying this. If you attach yourself to me, you will be secure and you will become pure as a result of this. So when we are when we are consciously connected to the Supreme Lord and we're happy, we're glad because we have this relationship, that's real pride. Yes, my father is Krishna. Your father is Krishna. Your father is Krishna and your father is Krishna and your mother is Radharani. So you've got the greatest... Yeah, you got the greatest parents in the world. So you don't have to worry about, you know, some people, they gripe and groan, oh, I got horrible parents, that's why I got all these problems. No, you got the greatest parents. You just aren't acknowledging them. You're not recognizing them. You're not seeing them for what they are. But if you see Krishna as your real father, he feeds you, he clothes you, he shelters you, he gives you everything that you need. He gives you your education, he gives you books, he gives you a spiritual master. If you want to be married, he'll get you a wife. He'll get you whatever you need in happiness or distress. If that's what you want. He'll also give you himself if you want to fully surrender to him. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects. So if we surrender to Krishna, if we're ready to sacrifice for Krishna, as Krishna says, work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu must be performed. Otherwise, work causes bondage in this material world. Therefore, perform your prescribed duty for his satisfaction, and in that way you'll be freed from the bondage to work. So he's saying that you want to get free of all your problems, your pains, your trials, your tribulations, all these things, just surrender your work to me. Surrender your heart to me. Surrender your love to me. Give me your all. Don't hold back anything. And all of your problems will go away because I will take them away. I will give you insight. I will give you knowledge. I will give you realization. I will give you myself. And when you have myself, you have everything. You don't need anything then
Because you will have the ultimate security, which is inner peace, inner strength, inner love, inner joy, inner satisfaction, inner courage. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to look any place. It's all inside, and Krishna is ready to give it to all of us. He's ready. All we have to do is say, "My Lord, make me more surrendered. Make me more sacrificial. I want to hold back. I have so many attachments to this food. You know, I have to have the halva every day. I can't help it. I've got to have that halva when he comes around. I need the sweet rice on Sunday. Please, free me. Can you?" He can. But we need to go to him. We need to beg him. Sometimes we don't like to beg because it makes us feel, you know, what is a beggar? A beggar is a loser. He's a nobody. You know, who wants to be a loser? But you're a winner when you beg from Krishna. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, he wrote this book called The Beggar. Yes, that we should be begging every moment for Krishna. Begging for what? Begging to remember him. Begging to offer our service to him. Through our glorious spiritual master, of course, who has given us all the different services that we can render. Begging Krishna that we remember him consciously, constantly. If we do that, we will be thrilled and filled with transcendental bliss all the time because Krishna is all bliss. And as we surrender ourselves, surrender means I think of Krishna, I glorify Krishna, I honor Krishna, I applaud Krishna, I thank Krishna. I say to Krishna, thank you so much. I have another day to serve you here in this world. Enable me, guide me, help me. So that I can be useful, so that other people may come. You've given me a little love. Help me to help others love you. If I can even do that, if I could find one person in this world that I can enable to love you even a little bit, then my day is perfect, and probably my life will be perfect too. Because there is nothing better, greater, higher to do than to get persons who have no love, no care, no understanding for Krishna, to get them to feel that love, attachment to that. I have a cousin. She's a Karmi. She doesn't believe in Krishna consciousness at all. But anyway, I preach to her. She has questions about this, that, and the other thing, and I answer them in a Krishna conscious way. And she feels very comfortable, very secure in those answers. She likes them. So she says, "You know, I don't believe in Krishna, but I chant his name." So she was a serious cancer patient. She was a terminal case. Anyway, so she got, and she had some parts amputated from her body. So she started chanting Krishna, and she had complete remission of her cancer. And she goes to the doctor. You know, every 3 or 4 months you have to go for tests. So the doctor said, "You are a miracle." She's in her late 70s, by the way. "You are a miracle woman," she said. I don't understand it, but you have no trace whatsoever of cancer. So she has her husband died many years ago. She has a new boyfriend. So anyway, she said her boyfriend, he's got problems. He had cancer of the kidneys. So she says, "Look, give it a shot. Chant the name Krishna. Who knows what will happen?" Anyway, he got an operation, took out one of the kidneys. After the operation, he felt, in his words, like $1 million. He says, "Who is that person?" He was chanting Krishna. She told him, "Chant Krishna." She says, "I don't know what it does. I don't know the meaning of it." Chant. So he chanted Krishna during the operation, before the operation, all of that. So I got a letter from my cousin. She said, "You know, Marvin wants to send you a donation." I said, "It's not necessary." He says, "Yes, he feels very grateful to you, and he wants to come to California and meet you also." They're in Florida, by the way. I wasn't planning to tell the story, but I couldn't resist it. So I want to thank you all very much for your kind listening and attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.
bring it over? Or should I come over?
No, no.
You'll bring it? Yeah. Or you want to put it in? Or should I take care of it? Give it to Guna?
I give it to Guna.
Okay. So you're going to bring it to me and I can give it to her?
Yeah, I'll just bring it outside your room.
Perfect. Thanks very much. I appreciate that. Oh, Haribo, Haribo.